What is going on, everybody? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. I'm your host, Curry Blandford, and today I'm talking to John Tyson. So I brought John on to talk about his book coming out in August called The Intentional Father, A Practical Guide to Raise Sons of Courage and Character. And I'm just at that spot in my fatherhood where, you know, I have boys that are about to reach the ages where I think a lot of intentionality is needed. And I feel like for me, a lot of times fatherhood can be more about surviving than it is about like intentionally doing stuff for and discipling my kids. And I want to be that intentional father to my kids. And what John does in this book is present sort of a paradigm for doing that, things to think about, practical ways to go about intentionally raising boys specifically in this book. And I just think this is such a needed thing. Like, it's hard to just come up with your own thing to be an intentional father, but to have somebody who's walked through it, who has walked through it with a bunch of other guys, and to show us the way, I think all dads need to be reading this. And I think it's such a helpful tool for not just following exactly what John does, but setting up a path, a helpful way of making intentional fatherhood your own. And so in this episode, we talk about just what it means to be an intentional father. When it comes to this work discussion, I mean, one of the most important things you can do when you're a parent is parent and disciple your children to be people about the kingdom. And that's what this episode is really all about. So there's so much good stuff in this episode. We talk about all the why behind his book. And I just think you'll walk away from this episode encouraged. If you're a parent, or if you know parents, like, this is just such a great one to tell people about and to show them the way. So I hope you get a lot out of it. Before we get to the interview, I just want to remind you to make sure you're following me on Instagram and Facebook at Theology of Hustle, and on Twitter at Curry Blandford, just to stay up to date with everything I got going on, all these cool guests, and to find out a little bit more about me and the purpose behind A Theology of Hustle. So I hope you really enjoy hearing from John. All right. Well, John, thanks so much for making time for me and coming on the podcast.
It's a joy to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Let's just get started having you sort of just introduce yourself to everybody.
Yes, I am a pastor and an author in New York City. I've been here starting churches, leading churches for the last 16 years. I'm originally from Adelaide, Australia, the great part of Australia that nobody's ever really from. And I moved to the U.S. When I was 20 with a vision to sort of seek and cultivate renewal in the Western church. So I got a scholarship to study theology when I was 20. That's why I moved over here. I'm married, been married 23 years. I have two kids. I have a son who's 21, who's just heading off to Kona, Hawaii to do University of the Nations. And I have a daughter going into nursing school in the fall. So about to be an empty nester. And written a few books, but I'm really excited about this latest one, which we're talking about today, which is about the role of fatherhood.
Yeah, I loved it. And I appreciated the book very much. So we've been married 16 years. I have three kids, but my son is 9. And then I have a 4-year-old son as well. So I was like digging through the book, and you're hitting me at a time that it really means a lot. So
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Let's just start off by like talking about maybe the why behind the book. Can you just talk about why you even wrote this book and the purpose and all that?
Yeah, so part of it was personal, and out of my own personal journey, I realized there was honestly almost a generational need. And so I didn't start with a generational vision. I just started out of like existential fear. It was like, oh my gosh, I have a son. I don't think I'm ready to raise this kid into manhood. I still felt like a child myself at the time. I was like, oh gosh, I don't know if I have what it takes. But you forget about that with the diapers and with the tantrums and all that. Yeah. I think what really struck me, I was a youth pastor in Nashville, and I was assigned to do campus ministry. So I'm doing Bible outreaches with all of these kids. And I kept bumping into these kids who wanted to debate me. And they ended up being Mormon kids. And I was just so impressed with their character and their manners and their confidence. I ended up reaching out to the local Mormon stake leader and asking if I could sort of like get more information about what they do. And he told me that it was actually the worship leader, the guy that was over all the worship. And he told me that the Mormons have a process called seminary, where during high school for 1 hour every day before school, they study the Bible to prepare them to go on a 2-year trip to extend God's kingdom. And then they'll be welcomed back into Mormon life with a very strong pathway and formation process. And I remember just thinking to myself, we have nothing like this. We do hyped up big events. We've got youth camp. Every now and then we do like a little discipleship and emphasis, but we don't have this solid, clear, conscious, intentional pathway. And I remember thinking to myself, holy crap, I've got a son. I need to figure out how to build one of these for my own kid. And so I spent years basically reading. And in reading the literature, I found most of the men's literature was written by wounded men with deeper longings. And I was like, where are the books that just tell you how to build a pathway and do it? And I realized they were almost non-existent. And so I just built something for my son. We ended up doing a 6-year journey together to go through it. But that's where it started. And along the way, when sort of friends saw what I was doing, they were like, hey, man, I got no plan. You've got some sort of plan. What is it? And I shared it with a few friends. And when my son turned 19, he did a gap year. And at the end of the gap year, we hiked the Camino de Santiago together across Spain to close it out. And I realized I probably need to turn this into something to help a few other folks. And that was the genesis of the book.
Yeah, I love it. That's good stuff. And I think you're right. I mean, just the more I read the book, I was just increasingly convinced, like you had been, that there is nothing. There is no manhood. Like, now you're officially a man, and you read like... for cultures throughout generations, right? You look at the Jewish culture, like there's this delineation of like from boyhood to manhood. Can you talk about that and the importance of that transition there?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, one of the things I think it's very important for us to do is to remember what it was like to be young, and to the uncertainty, the confusion, the excitement, the wonder, the dread of that particular stage of development. There's so many different kind of energies that young men in particular are wrestling with: their sexuality, their strength, acceptance from their peers, romantic relationships, like all of these things. They're trying to figure out a whole series of firsts. And so I think that if we don't, our sons are going to do all of these things with or without us. The question is, will they be blessed or wounded in their experience? And the goal of an intentional father is to design something where, when they are trying to figure out what to do with all of, you know, like the young male energy and all of the attending issues, that it's channeled in a redemptive, healthy, formative way. And without that, you will see self-initiation, which is young people trying to prove to one another that they are adults now or that they are maturing. And they'll often do it in very, very damaging ways. So, yeah, that liminal space of a conscious pathway, a moment of recognition and invitation into a journey, I think is absolutely vital for every young person.
Yeah. I think, we're talking about a theology of work on this podcast, right?
Yes.
And I think one of these works that we do, like one of the things that we put our hands to as people that we don't think about how they interact with the kingdom of God is just in our parenting, right? Like, this is one of the most important things we do when we're parents. It's one of the most important things that we do. And I think like we haven't connected that to like this kingdom mindset and instilling that into our kids sometimes.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, like, here's a practical example. So I dropped out of high school when I was 16. And I did an apprenticeship as a butcher. So I am formally trained as a butcher. And I did that till I was 20. I did an official apprenticeship. I have all the like proper papers or whatever. I started making real money at 16. And I'm not trying to put anybody down. I'm not trying to throw any shade. But my parents never had a single conversation with me about budgeting, spending, money, nothing like that. In fact, my boss came to me when I was 18 years old and he said to me, I mean, pretty aggressive culture, but he was just like, you are wasting your money. And he said, you need to buy a house. You're not going to go to college. Like, this is what you do. Home ownership is a thing. So I bought a house when I was 19. I moved out. I lived on my own. I entered into the world of adulthood. And so I remember when I was getting ready to drop out of high school, my parents said this to me. This is the whole conversation. My dad said, well, if you put your heart to it, I'm sure you do well. And my mum said, I think you could do more than be a butcher. That was it. End of decision. And I did it. Here's what I did when my son got a job. We read Why Work by Dorothy Sayers, and we talked about a theology of vocation. He got a job at Chick-fil-A. I prepped him for the interview. I helped him open a bank account, a savings account, a Roth IRA account. We read Your Money Counts and a couple of other books. And then I gave him a theology of money and spending. And I think back to that experience versus mine. So I think fatherhood is one of those foundational issues where they touch every area of work.
Yeah.
And it's one of those sort of like causes behind the public vision that is often unaddressed. And if you have a dad that teaches you about work, gives you a good work ethic, teaches you about character and discipline, our world would look very, very different today. And so that's a part of the vision of parenting, is to connect those things together.
Yeah, I totally agree. I love it. We do a lot of teaching. We do, we're in the adoption and foster care world. So we do some teaching around, you know, parenting kids from hard places or with trauma histories. And so we teach this class. And one of my first things I love to do is I stand up in front of the class and I ask them like where they got their parenting from, you know? Mm-hmm. And so inevitably people will always say, well, my parents parented me A, B, and C. They did this, this, and that. And I turned out okay. So what I'm doing should be okay. And my favorite thing to do is to look them in the eye and say, did you turn out okay? You know, like, because there's this mentality that like just kind of throwing it at the wall and seeing what sticks might work. But what you're talking about is a totally different methodology, right? For like actually walking through a process of raising a boy to become a man.
Yeah, I mean, so the book's called The Intentional Father. And I open the book by talking about five kinds of dads. The first kind of dad is an irresponsible dad. And this is basically almost like a sperm donor. It's like gets somebody pregnant, runs off, does not acknowledge their obligation or the possibilities of like bringing a human life into being. Right. Then you've got ignorant fathers. These are dads who just like they don't have the tools. They don't have a vision. They just don't know what they're doing. Then you get inconsistent dads. These are dads who are torn, like their own ambition, their own brokenness, and then moments where they get it right. But that can do a lot of damage, inconsistency in a kid's life. Then you get involved dads. And this is your typical good American dad. This is the come to the game, do a sex talk, you know, show up at graduate. Like this dad's in the game. Yeah. But getting back to your former question, which is like, it seems to be working with me. Intentional parents go beyond involved parents. And they ask this question. God, of all the kids who have ever lived in all of recorded human history, who have you given me? What do you have for them? And how do I help prepare them for their destiny? And so to me, that's the difference between involved and intentional. It's asking, God, who do you want this person to be? And how do I bring the resources, skill, wisdom, and help that I have to help them become who they want? And if we don't do that, we can do a lot of unintentional damage just by projecting our story into our own kids and thinking it'll be fine. Our kids are very different than us. My daughter could not be any more different from me in personality, traits, type, vision. My son is also very, very different from me. If I just sort of said, do it my way, rather than here's God's way and let me help you figure out how to apply it to who you are and your circumstances, we're gonna like unintentionally cause damage in our kids' life. So I think there's tremendous power in having the humility to look forward to what God has for them and not just project from your own story or your own brokenness.
Yeah. Yeah. I've discovered that most of parenting is figuring out yourself, right? Like, like dealing with your own stuff first.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, 25% of the book, the first chunk of the book is basically helping you sit with your own story. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of authors over the years who've made the point that whatever pain is not transformed is transferred, and that unintentionally we will break our kids in the places we were broken because we don't know how else to act, particularly under moments of pressure. And so you have to sit, make sense of your own story. You've got to dam up the brokenness and release the blessing, find a way to bring that through so that you can, you know, and this can be very hard for people. Like one of the exercises I have there is writing a letter honoring your own father.
Yeah.
And some people have fathers, some people don't, you know, like write to the void if you have to, write to a mentor. But it's one of those moments where you got to make peace. You know, there's a scene in, I don't know if you like Bruce Springsteen, but I just walked past right here outside Springsteen on Broadway. He's coming back with his live show. And awesome. I remember reading his biography that he wrote, Born to Run, and he just had this idea in it, which was so potent. Bruce had a very strained relationship with his father and, you know, just couldn't figure it out. His dad wanted him to cut his hair. This is the 70s. Cut your hair. Don't be a hippie. Get a real job. You know, be a part of the establishment. So they had a lot of tension together. But then when Bruce was getting ready to have his own son, his dad did something that made no sense to him. He drove across America from Jersey to California and sat down and had beer with him for breakfast. And it was Bruce Springsteen's kind of like, what are we doing here? And his dad said to him, you've been really good to us, Bruce. And we haven't been really good to you. Mm. And that was the whole conversation. And Bruce said, here's what I understood, that when it comes to our history, you either have ghosts or ancestors. And ghosts haunt you with brokenness, but ancestors bring you a story and blessing. I said, this was my moment where my dad was stepping into my life, asking for forgiveness and saying, let me be an ancestor, not a ghost that haunts you. Mm. And I thought, man, that's a potent sense of understanding, because we are going to shape our kids in incredible ways. And the question is, are we going to haunt them or are we going to help them? And I think making sure that our stories are together is one of the ways that really pass on blessing. We become an ancestor story rather than some sort of cautionary tale.
Mm, wow, that's powerful. That's good stuff. And a great way to think about that sort of thing, what we do. And John, I know you talk about this in the book a lot, but do you think some of the issue we have with sort of raising boys in our day and age is that we just, like, as Christians, as evangelicals, have not really defined what manhood even is and, like, how to go about becoming a man?
Yeah, I mean, you know, evangelical culture sort of works in two ways. You have trends based on popular culture, and then you have reactionary movements against those trends. Mm. So the trends are always saying, we're right, here's the future, follow us. And the reactionary movements are like, here's the caution, this will corrupt you, be faithful to God. And inside those two reactionary movements, you often have theological claims. You often have institutions that form. You have schools of thought. You have huge media complexes that are popularizing and distributing those ideas. Then within local churches, you have imitators. You have people who buy in. You have loyalties, lines that form and all the rest of it. I'm actually trying to skip all of that. I don't want to do toxic masculinity, and then I don't want to reclaim masculinity. I want to get out of the pendulum. And I want to ask the question, how do we raise young men to be like a Jesus? Hmm. Jesus is the ultimate man. And so what are, like, the virtues, what are the characteristics that actually make someone like Jesus? And how do we lay that foundation for our son? So there's a lot of ways I'm trying to do that in the book. But one of them is I talk about the foundational virtues that need to be in the life of all men. Then I talk about family values, things from your own story that you want to impart. Then helping your kid find his own value. So I'm actually trying to be biblically value-driven, kingdom-oriented, Christ-centered, rather than just sort of like culturally reactionary. And so as an example, Jesus was strong. Jesus was strong. He had courage. But it wasn't manifest by eating meat and driving a truck. And on the other hand, it wasn't manifest by just, like, sitting around being introverted and sensitive. We don't know how that strength was projected culturally. We just know that he had the courage to include others. He would weep. He came from a place of heart, yet he had the capacity to confront hypocrisy, to go to the cross and love his enemies. And so I'm just trying to get our eyes back on Jesus and form young people into the image of Jesus. Dallas Willard said that we measure maturity by how much we become like Jesus, not the accomplishments that we do. And I don't want a culture war. I just want to build emotionally healthy, spiritually competent, godly young men who look like Jesus. That's the end goal on the vision.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful vision, and it doesn't happen without intentionality, right? Like that's not just going to, like, manifest itself in your child's life. So I think that's important. And, you know, you define like manhood. I don't remember the words exactly, but you talk about just being a servant, right? Like we're trying to raise boys who are servants.
So I talk about, you know, image bearers and sons of God who are entrusted with authority and responsibility. So we receive our identity. It's not one we invent or perform. And we're entrusted, which means that like we have tremendous agency to impact our lives. And we are to create, we're to do things, we're to cultivate, which means we're to like work on the good stuff. We are to care and to defend what it is that God has given us for his glory and for the good of others. And so, you know, hopefully it's like a noble vision of manhood. It's honest with sin. It's for the good of others. And I think if we get that vision, that'll keep us away from the cultural reactionary frameworks.
Yeah. For sure. I totally agree. I think that's good stuff. Can we walk down the primal path, as you call it, a little bit? And can you just sort of describe even what all this stuff is and what you have going on?
Yeah. So I want to be clear here. After saying very carefully, I don't want to create stereotypes and all the rest of it. The journey I called this with my son was called the primal path. Now, the reason I called it that is because I was trying to create vision for a 13-year-old boy.
Sure.
And so I wanted it to sound like middle school-ish. And so, you know, maybe there's a more sophisticated way to do it, but it certainly engaged my son's heart at the time, which I was grateful for. Basically, the primal path goes through four movements. And honestly, to be clear here, my vision, like what the end goal of what I want to happen, what I would just pray God would do through this book is to normalize in the evangelical tradition a conscious, intentional pathway of spiritual formation from adolescence into adulthood. That's my vision. I just want it to be normal. So a kid shows up at college and it's not what did your dad do to help you become a man? It's like, which path did you choose in your guaranteed journey into spiritual formation? That's my vision. So basically it talks about four movements. The first movement is preparation. And this whole thing is where dad really comes to terms with his own story, his own wounds, his own gifts, his own strength, thinks through his history, gets a vision for the future, the legacy he wants to leave, and deals with his own heart. So that's about the dad's preparation. The next part is initiation. And this is consciously creating a rite of passage moment where your son knows he is stepping across the line from boyhood into an adolescent journey. It's a liminal space. He will now enter a conscious pathway of transition from boyhood into manhood. The next part is formation, which is what you do during that time. And so in the book, I talk about sort of like mastering the roles of manhood. I talk about five shifts that need to happen to move from being a boy into being a man. Talk about helping him understand the big picture of life, getting the big moments right. And at the end, I talk about recognition, which is like all men want to know, am I a man? Yes or no? How do I know? If you were to ask my son, are you a man? He would say, yes. You say, how do you know? Well, he would say, I did a 6-year journey with my dad. And after we hiked 500 miles across Spain, I ran into the ocean and was baptized and blessed by my dad and recognized as a man in our community. So there's an entry moment, and there's a moment of blessing and closure that welcomes him into the community of men. So those are the four major movements. And then there's some tools and exercises between those big movements to help you customize and do this for the kids that God's given you.
Yeah, I loved it. I think it makes a lot of sense. And just like, I don't know, it got me kind of like excited about like fatherhood and like this period that we're entering into, you know. I think like I'm really good with the littles. Like I'm a stay-at-home dad in addition to being a pastor. So I've always been home with my kids all of the time and tried to be intentional with them. But moving into sort of middle school, high school is like very intimidating for me, I feel like, just because like this is when you're really, you know, crafting them and you're dealing with some of the like more complicated issues than when they were little, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and like I think the book's done its job. Not if everybody does everything that's in the book, okay? You know, so it's like it's principles that you can apply in your own situation. But if a dad goes, if a dad has this moment, holy crap, my son's 12, I've got no idea. I know I should do something, but I don't know what I do. If they read the book and there's a sense of relief and excitement that says, oh, okay, like, you know, there's some great ideas in here. I'm not clueless now. I'm going to have to be intentional, but I got like an idea of what I'm going to do. And then in their heart, they go, gosh, I think I can do this in a way that leaves a legacy in my kid's life. And I'm excited about that opportunity. The book will have done its job by those two things. So I'm glad to hear that it did produce, like, gave you some ideas or some vision and also some excitement. That's like a total win for me.
Yeah, I love it. And I do want to encourage you in that. We've decided we haven't ever established our family values, you know, because you talk about like talking to your son about your family values. And so we're going to sit down as a family and sort of get our values, like the actual words together, you know, behind that. Yes. So there's a first step even happening.
I love that. So, yes, I love that. The book is based on a course. The course is called, you know, The Primal Path. And so I've had, you know, almost 1,000 dads go through this course at this point. Wow. So like getting a lot of data points back. Yeah. And a lot of people comment on that, which is like, hey, this is all in us intuitively. And the reason it's in you intuitively, because it's from God.
Right.
But like the giving us a few exercises and being more intentional has really sharpened our family culture. And I'm really encouraged to hear that because I think it does make a big difference. One of the books that really impacted me was Stephen Covey's book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective Families, not habits, families. And he writes about family culture. And he had this idea in there called building a family immune system. And he says a healthy family has an immune system that can fend off rebellion and temptation. And he says if you consciously cultivate, and he gives you some tools, and I've included some of those. He says your family will be able to withstand the initial challenges of the teenage years. And I love that image, a health, immune, fighting off these things. And hopefully that values exercise will contribute a little bit of that.
Yeah, that's cool. I love that. What, as you were walking through this process with your son, what did that do to you?
Well, you know, this was a long time, 13 to 19.
Yeah.
And there's definitely in those hundreds of days and hours together, I think there's two moments that stand out to me. One, you know, if you really think about it, a lot of people have a lot of sadness in their hearts and low grade depression because they, if you go back through your life, there's a lot of people who never really felt wanted and celebrated and valued as a young person. They might have been exhorted, they might have been told in words, good job, but they never really felt loved. And it's actually an amazing issue. Go back and ask yourself, how many times did you feel loved by your parents? I wanted my kids to feel loved. And there was a moment where, you know, the initial primal path I drew up on a big chalkboard, and I had it in a room, and we would sit in front of it every day, and I'd sort of like give the big picture. Here's where we're going over the next few years. And one day it's behind me, and my son says to me, who took you through the primal path, Dad? I said, no one. And he said, what do you mean no one took you through this? Where did it come from? And I said to him, well, I made this up. And he said, you made this up? I said, yeah, man, I made all of this for you because I love you and you're my son and I want you to have a better pathway than I had. I just care about you. And he got choked up. Then he said, wow, Dad, I feel really loved. I feel really loved. And that was a moment that just struck me because I was like, gosh, if that's one moment, most people don't even have a moment where they felt loved. Kids often feel provided for. Sometimes they feel safe, but knowing that you're cherished and you're valued, that was big for me. But I felt like I'm passing on a generational blessing through that. The second one, I took my son, I'm from Australia. So one of the exercises is called putting your son's story in context, putting your story in context. And teenagers tend to be completely narcissistic just by stage. It's not even conscious or intentional. It's just like you got to go through it. There's a stage they're in. And so I wanted my son to see, hey, like the universe didn't spring into existence the day that you were born. Like you're born into a history and a story. And so I took him to Australia and I showed him where I developed all of my values and wanted him to understand my story really well. And then one night after a colossal day, I was so exhausted. And my sons are in the hotel room and I'm just sitting outside looking at the beach. And I just feel God speak to me very, very clearly. He just says to me, John, I am forming you with more intentionality than you are with your son if you just pay attention. My commitment to you is greater than your commitment to your son. Open your eyes, look for my activity in your life. And that was like one of those powerful moments because I thought, man, I'm doing this out of my love for my son. But then I realized it's like almost like God sort of put a new filter on my own life where I could just see his hand and see that he was directly acting to shape me into the image of Jesus in ways I hadn't noticed. So those are two big ones, like feeling the father heart of God and hopefully imparting that father heart to my son. I've got hundreds, but those are two really standout moments for me.
And that's a powerful image. I've always told people as a pastor, it's easy to get up and stand up and say, God loves you. It's much harder for me to say God loves me. And I think what you're describing is that seeing that love of God through parenting, which is pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
So it's good stuff. Okay. I love the primal path. Can we just talk briefly about discipleship and what discipleship looks like? I mean, I understand the whole thing could be under this broad discipleship, but bringing them up in like actually understanding God and God's kingdom and what the kingdom means for them.
Yeah, so I think discipleship is ultimately about the lordship of Jesus, which means it's not just explicitly theological or content about God himself. It's a vision of a God-centered life in all things. So, yeah, I have a unit, like I did a whole unit on the Father, you know, like the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit, classic Christian doctrines, you know, really what is the gospel. You know, Nate got baptized. It was one of the most beautiful moments. I've got framed up on my wall a picture of him like bursting out of the water and being hugged after he's baptized. So I tried to like baptize him after I basically had given him a true understanding of the Christian faith. And then I wanted him to basically have like a Christ-like filter over the other areas, friendship, sex, money, ambition, life, pain, heartache, brokenness, and all the rest of it. So I started by giving him a vision of who God is. Why Christianity is good news. I tried to draw a lot from my own story. Here's what I've learned about God. And I did a little exercise that's in the book called Know Be Do, which is like, what does your son need to know? That's about information. Who do you want him to be? That's about character. And what do you want him to be able to do? And that's about skill. And so in that framework, I did that with discipleship. What do I need him to know about God? Who do I need him to be? Which is primarily about the fruit of the Spirit, walking in the Spirit. And then what do I need him to be able to do? Which is like practical tools. Here's how to read your Bible. Here's how to understand prayer. Here's how to understand spiritual warfare. Here's how to deal with temptation. Here's how to share the gospel. Here's how to bless your enemies when you're hurt. Here's how to handle rejection. So just like dealing with a lot of scenarios. I will say this. One thing I did, and I did this with my daughter as well, which is particularly effective, was I would try and give them like crisis scenarios and make them come up with the answer to try and figure out the biblical ethics. So for example, say, hey, you're over at your friend's house and he's dating a girl his parents don't like. And he goes into the bathroom and the parents ask you directly, is he dating this girl or not? We want to know. What do you do? Do you preserve the friendship? Do you care about authority? What is a lie? Is it ever right to lie? So my son had an hour and a half convo on that.
Wow.
And it was all of it. Like, and so I tried to make it like real world discipleship complex scenarios, things that they would face. And sort of bring it down to their level rather than just a big content dump. And then the other thing is like, you know, model it in front of them and bring them into it, you know, like to help my son become a servant. We were planning a church at the time. He signed up to be on the pack up setup team, so portable church. And we would be the first people there. We would carry all the speakers out, all the heavy boxes of kid stuff. And I wanted him to know, hey, when no one sees, you see me up the front preaching, you see me on YouTube, but here's how things happen behind the scenes, servanthood. So a lot of modeling like that. And over the course of time, I think that gave me like a pretty robust vision, at least a good foundation.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. I already got both of my sons helping with setup and teardown. It's just part of being a PK, you know.
Yeah, so. Totally.
That's good stuff. John, do you feel like we covered the book pretty well? You know, is there anything else you really wanted to dive into?
No, I mean, the only other thing I want to say, whenever you talk about an issue like fatherhood, you're really dealing, honestly, with a lot of hurt. There's a lot of people with tremendous wounds. There's a lot of people who in many ways feel unblessed by their own fathers. And as a result, have spent a lot of their life seeking blessing, seeking to touch that wound with affirmation or accomplishments. And, you know, I just want to say to those dads, I'm not here to produce any guilt whatsoever. No guilt, no shame, no condemnation. You know, I've had a few folks do this and say, I can't do this. And I say, well, then don't do it. Like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, if you can't do it, don't do it, because you'll perpetually fail and be discouraged. So I always tell people, do what you can, not what you can't.
Yeah.
It's the same principle of prayer. Pray what you've got, not what you think you should pray. True prayer is in the honesty. And I just say, hey, if you can do it once a month, I promise you over the next 5 years, you can have potent moments and things that will shape your son. You do it once a week, great. But do what you can, not what you can't. But be intentional and be consistent based on your capacity. And I believe God will honor it. God honors fathers being intentional. And you will find, I think, a strange grace accompanies your efforts. Supernatural power. I think it just comes in whenever we move in this important direction. And so I just would encourage you, rely on God's grace. Don't be discouraged. Start today. One small step of intentionality. I'll just say this one thing, which is an observation after doing this. You know, so my son is now 21 years old. He's like, in every sense of the word, a full legal adult in the United States of America. And I often talk to him. We spent a decent amount of time together. He's home from college right now. And I said, like, look, man, we did all of that content. We did all of that crazy stuff. Like, what did you really learn from all of that? And he'll say things like, you know, Dad, you would say to me sometimes, you are who you are when no one's looking. But you'd also say, don't beat yourself up if you're the wrong person when no one's looking. Use it as fuel to understand yourself and begin a process of transformation. And he said, I think about that all the time. And it's like, you know, I did hundreds and hundreds of like teachings and lessons, but I was like, if he has an awareness of grace and formation and living in the presence of God. Now, there's more things than that, but it's an example. Yeah. The crazy thing is that was never once in any of our formal material. It was just something I'd say every now and then along the way. So richly, and you will reap a harvest. You just never know what the harvest will actually be and how God will use it.
Yeah, that's good. Amen. Amen to that. It's good stuff. Where are the best places to sort of find you and all of that stuff, John?
Well, I mean, I'm on Twitter and Instagram, John Tyson, JONTYSON. And yeah, and the book's called The Intentional Father. And you can get it at all the places, you know, wherever you buy books.
All the places.
All the places, all the things.
I'll make sure we have all the links. So,
okay.
Okay. So I like to finish off the episodes with two final questions. Are you okay moving into those?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So my first question is, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
The strangest job I've ever had, it was like a total scam. I used to collect money for a charity, and 80% of the money did not go to the charity. It went to the people collecting money for the charity. I might have been seriously like 13 years old or something. I saw an ad in the newspaper and it said, meet in a parking lot. And I literally got in a van with strangers, drove to another part of the city. They handed me a bucket and a name tag. And I just went knocking door to door saying this, hi, we're in the neighborhood collecting money for abused children. I wonder if you'd like to make a donation. That was it. That's the weirdest job. I was so young, I wasn't even like really consciously aware of what was happening.
Were you any good at that job? Did you like make some money?
Honestly, mate, it was a racket. It was a racket. It was a racket.
That's crazy. Yeah. Oh, wow. I'm glad you survived though. That's cool.
Yeah, here we are, man.
Okay, so my final question is, what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring God's kingdom more into their work?
You know, there's a teaching the Jewish community have called Kavana, and it's an idea of holy intent. Mm. And there's a rabbi who told a story about a cobbler, and they had a teaching that basically said when the fall happened, the Shekinah glory of God was shattered in potential into every molecule of the universe, but it was reclaimed by doing things with holy motives. Mm. And so when you work with holy intent, you bring glory to bear on the things. And what is glory? It's weight or significance. And so how do you take a meaningless job and make it significant? It's by your attitude. You can clean a toilet, which I used to do as a janitor as well. And I would do it literally. I would say, I've been to restrooms when I was busted to go to the toilet and just thought, dear God, do I have to? And then I've stepped into restrooms and just thought, this is a little portal of grace. Let me clean every restroom like Jesus would use this. That became weighty and significant. So yeah. The cobbler, when he was stitching the top of the shoe to the sole of the shoe with holy intent, was rethreading the glory of God through the universe. That's the number one thing, the power of holy intent in motives, whether you're making coffee, whether you're making deals, whether you're changing diapers, whether you are doing social media, you do it with holy intent and you'd be amazed at how the glory of God shows up and even the most mundane things can become meaningful.
Amen. I appreciate that very much. John, it was so nice to meet you. Thanks for making time and thanks for the work.
No worries, mate. So great to chat.
Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing from John and just hearing about fatherhood and the intentionality behind it. I know I'm just like so excited to sort of begin this journey and to think through what it means for me to be an intentional father. And I think no matter where you are on that journey, I think there's still time to be intentional with your kids and to spend that intentional time pouring into them at any stage, really. And so I just hope you're encouraged and I hope you are just feeling energized by some of this stuff too. So check out all that John's got going on. The Primal Path is a whole thing. There's a whole website, a whole class. So there's just a lot of resources for you out there to get you started down this road. Now is a great time to go to the bottom of your iTunes app. You can leave a rating and review for me there just to help get the word out about the podcast. And I just greatly appreciate it. I love hearing what you're enjoying about the podcast and all of that. So do all that for me. And until next time, get out there and hustle.